It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer, joining me, Ed Jordanic, as always. And for the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to do something we've never done on Dome and Domer before, and that is to talk about one play the entire time. Ed, I've watched that replay like five times, and it gets worse each time. And I now understand why Brian Kelly did what he did today, which is to basically call this out for what it is. It's gotten worse. I feel worse about it as time goes by. I mean, you were there in the stadium. What went through your mind as it happened?
Boy, I've never kind of shifted from euphoria to depression as quickly, I don't think. I don't think the scoreboard even changed to 33-31. A couple things. Let's start with the details and then move on to the bigger picture, because I think the bigger picture is not as depressing at all. The bigger picture is very positive. Yeah. But, you know, let's just take the whole concept of pass interference. You know, first of all, it's obviously always the most kind of one of the most controversial and most kind of game-changing kind of calls in college football or pro football. I mean, PIs are just always kind of wrought with controversy and always make a huge difference. But you do not see offensive pass interference called very often. Number two, when you do see it called, it's almost always called when an offensive player is basically trying to himself is the target of the pass, right?
Yeah, he's getting the pass,
exactly.
Right.
So like Koyak, that call, right? That was in the first half, I think, or in the early third quarter. That was obviously, that was a situation where he was desperate. So that was a different situation. But usually, you see it when the player who is targeted is trying to gain an advantage. Number two, on the pick plays, which have been around for a while now, there's almost always the offender is running horizontally, not north and south, basically, not straight up the field, but running horizontally. I can't think of a time I've seen a similar call. Most calls, there's some sort of similarity to them after time. If you watch football, penalties that are called, there's some similarity to them. So you take those two things, and then you take in...
Add to it, you don't usually see it called in the last minute of a game.
Well, that's the bigger picture issue. It's like, right. I'm definitely from the Chris Mad Dog Russo school of officiating is, unless, I mean, if that call was not made, but for a few FSU fans today, there would not be a hue and cry in the media about how is that not called. Right.
It would not even be an issue.
If it would have been mentioned on the telecast, I would have been surprised. So that to me is kind of a standard of a judgment. Do you make a call, in a crucial situation? Do you eat the whistle, in a crucial situation? I think that, in a lot of sports, there is kind of that you do see that a lot of times, right? You see it in hockey in playoffs and in overtimes. You see it in, you want the players to decide the game on the field. And of course, if there's something egregious that changes things, to Notre Dame's, if you want to blame kind of Notre Dame for anything is, and I don't think Procise and Fuller did anything illegal or, against the rules, but they didn't have to.
Right, they didn't have to. It was a blown coverage. The truth of the matter is a blown coverage.
I just saw something on the internet today kind of going through the whole thing that, whoever wrote it seems to be, have anointed themselves this kind of, this king of the rules or whatever. But, first thing I saw on the replay when I saw it, and I was at the opposite end of the field, when I talked to guys who were there, talked to guys up in the press box, talked to a bunch of guys who confirmed this for me, the immediate reaction of the three Florida State defenders on that side of the field. What happens on pass interference in a football game, or the when an offensive player or a defensive player feels that they've been interfered with this day and age, immediately they start making the sign of a flag. Like, throw the flag.
Yeah, no, but Ed, I don't even think they were doing that.
No, that's the whole point, Mike. They were upset with each other. They thought they had lost the game.
They were upset with each other because they blew the coverage.
They totally blew it.
That's right. They blew the coverage.
And as a matter of fact, as you can see on the replay, one of the guys ripped his helmet off, which is an automatic 15-yard penalty. Okay, and number one, you know, on the field, they announced that the penalty was on Fuller. In the press box,
but
I've confirmed with, you know, I went to the game with Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated and flew home with him, and he's such a good reporter on this. Will Fuller, they checked with the ACC officials, the penalty was on Fuller, okay? Which makes this even more frustrating.
Okay? Yeah, exactly,
Procise was held, okay? The defensive back for Florida State engaged with him right off the line, okay? So you could make just as good a case that there was defensive holding on to Procise as you could that there was offensive pass interference on Fuller, right? So all these things, you know. And listen, and the main point here is, I think that the one that you were trying to make, and I'm sorry to hog up this airtime because it makes me crazy, but the main point that you were trying to make was, this discussion we're having just proves the point that you don't throw a flag on a play like that.
No, you don't. You just don't. You know, because now that I will say this, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going to come out of this. And my only argument is this. Yeah, I mean, everybody's going to say, well, you know what? Notre Dame's got their destiny in their own hands because if they win the rest of their games, you know, they're in the playoffs. Here's the problem with that. We won that game last night. And with the schedule that we got, that's pretty doggone hard to run the table, winning every single game, going 12-0 with the schedule we got. And you know what? Now we've got our backs against the wall. Now, granted, I know that Brian Kelly is going to do the right thing here, but I think that this gets worse for Florida State as this goes on, because what's going to happen is everybody's going to come to the realization that they got away with one. Well, and, you know, that's going to hurt them, I think, moving forward. Now, they don't got anybody left
on
the schedule.
Well, they've got to play Louisville at Louisville on a Thursday night, and I think that could, you know, give them a little...
There could be some problems. Yeah, there could be some problems there. You never know.
This sets up just fine for Notre Dame in the sense that, if they were going to, this is, you know, losing to Florida State in Tallahassee, we're talking about their playoff chances now, right?
I like that. I agree. Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to get better for us.
You know, one of the things that was interesting is that, you know, the scoreboards, the Jumbotrons at Tallahassee, you know, like in a lot of places, have the video board, and then right next to it they have a running tally of the team statistics for the entire game, and they just stay up there the whole game. Okay, so at the end of the game, first downs, Notre Dame had more.
We won every
rushing yards. Notre Dame had more passing yards. Notre Dame had more time of possession. Notre Dame had, you know, so it was, you know, in that sense, when it comes to the playoff thing. Obviously, Notre Dame now needs Florida State to win out, and they need to win out. I think if those two things happen, given the schedules for the other teams, you know, I think it'll be pretty hard to keep Notre Dame out of that top four. But I don't see another scenario. Notre Dame cannot lose another game and get into the top four.
No, there's no way.
And I think.
And if anything, there's still a little bit of jeopardy there.
Sure.
I mean, there is. I mean, there's still going to be some controversy here because I think. Right off the bat, you got, you know, Oregon. You got
Alabama's looking stronger every week.
Alabama's going to make the case now.
Michigan State or Ohio State, even though
they beat Arkansas by 1 point,
right.
You know,
Michigan State.
We then got blown out.
Right.
But anyways,
yeah, Michigan State or Ohio State are going to have an argument. You know,
yeah, one of those guys. But I don't know. I mean, you look at Michigan State's schedule. You look at Ohio State's schedule. And I mean, it's like, who do they play?
Well, you would think that if Michigan State and Oregon each end up with one loss. That knocks out Michigan State, right, since Oregon beat them head-to-head, okay? You would think that if Notre Dame finishes with one loss and Florida State goes undefeated, that kind of trumps, you know, a one-loss Mississippi team or a one-loss Mississippi State team, depending on, you know, I can't believe that they would take Mississippi State and Mississippi unless it's just an, they're both undefeated, and then the game, their game against each other is just an absolute barn burner, kind of like ours last night. You know, I could see them taking both teams just because they play such tough schedules in conference. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. The bottom line is Notre Dame has a pretty clear path now. You know, they know what they have to do.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think it still could get into some trouble areas, because here's what I think is going to happen. And this is why it's really difficult when I feel like the tables have turned from a press standpoint. You know, the chances of Notre Dame winning a national championship like they did in 1977 are gone. You don't jump from five to number one because everybody loves Notre Dame. It's the exact opposite. And I think in this playoff system, unfortunately, because the press is now totally against us, it's almost like you got to be undefeated.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if the press is totally against us. I mean, I think the fact that, you know, we went from basically what, five to seven, you know.
I agree with you. I think there's some positives there. However, you know, I think what's going to happen is they're going to complain that, well, these teams won their conference championship. Notre Dame doesn't even play in a conference championship. So you can't choose them. Now we got to go with who won the conference championship. And it's going to be a tough battle to win that PR argument, because everybody is all about the here and now.
Well, you know what? For all of those disadvantages that we might have in that sense, we have a lot of advantages when it comes to the number one motivation for a four-team playoff, and that is cold, hard cash. Okay? So last night, you know, I think the ABC ratings, you know, somebody told me today, or maybe Pete told me today, that, you know, they were the highest since the, you know, Notre Dame-Southern Cal game in 2012. You know, so in other words, and I just read somebody's tweet that said they could replay the Notre Dame-Florida State game from last night, show it next Saturday night,
all week,
and it would still have higher ratings than any game.
Right.
On the, you know, so we have those kinds of advantages that obviously a Mississippi State would not have, or that perhaps a, you know, another, you know, or Mississippi, you know. So in other words, that I think that's all a wash. But it's a very clear path for Notre Dame. They have to take it week by week.
They
have to win.
Yeah,
and that's their, you know, I do think they need a little help from Florida State. I think it will hurt their chances if Florida State loses. So
I would agree. But, you know, I do think that Brian Kelly, I mean, I'm so glad he did what he did today, because he's doing the right thing. And I think this is something you can build off of. You know, this is the momentum you need, because it is. It's going to be tough now, because we have got to show up and dominate from this point forward. Not that we got to win every game by multiple touchdowns, but we have to avoid that situation, which is your, you know, the letdown or that one game that kind of, I'm hoping North Carolina is that game, but there's always one game every single season, whether it was Pittsburgh last year or what, where we just don't put it together. You know, it's one of those games that just things don't click for us.
Yeah. Well, I think you know, Arizona State is going to be a shootout. That's going to be incredibly tough on the road. I mean, they made mincemeat of Stanford last night. The game was not as close as the score indicated. You know, USC is obviously finding their groove on offense and putting up, you know, some points. So, there's a long, tough road ahead for Notre Dame. I mean, they can't worry, you know, they can't get caught up in the stuff that we get caught up in, and they won't.
That's right.
You know,
one
of the things that Brian Kelly, I think, does really well is strike this right tone, okay? So I love his quote. Maybe because he stole it from me last night, about is that, you know, when you want to be the new heavyweight champ, you know, you got to knock him out. You're not going to get the split decision.
That's right. You don't leave it up to the refs.
Exactly. So, you know, there are things that Notre Dame could have done last night, right? They could have, you know, one of those drives, they could have held Florida State to a field goal, you know, in the second half.
Well, let me ask you a couple questions, because I, you know,
sure,
we could sit here and talk about this one play all night long, but, what did you think about going for it there, you know, on the 45?
Well, I just thought it was hilarious, because our defense got off to such a good start, and we're going for it at midfield in the first quarter. And at the end, at the end of the game, when our defense is getting shredded and we're behind, we're punting.
That's right.
You know, which turned out to be, you know, the perfect call, because our defense stiffened it, you know, the right time and pinned them, and you know, we got the ball back.
It was, but I mean, this is the tough thing about being the college football coach at Notre Dame, is because of this kind of second guessing stuff. Because, you know, it's easy, but I will say, you know, in front of all the guys here that we were watching the game out on the West Coast, in the room, I'm yelling at everybody like, man, we should be punting this right now. This is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And, but you know what, all of a sudden, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that happens. I mean, if he gets the first down, then nobody says anything.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I think, you know, it was all part of his approach to this game, which obviously was
psyche.
We are going down there to win this football game.
That's
and
right.
I believe
and
in you guys.
We're going to go for it right now.
I don't care what those Yahoos on Dome and Dome are saying about you offensive linemen, because this offensive line is a lot better than people are giving it credit. You know, he was basically saying, listen, you're my guys. We can do this, and we are a better offensive team than they are, and they can't, you know, we're gonna roll on these guys. And again, you know, I didn't, now tell me, because I have not watched the replay of the game yet, I'm just too damn tired, but I will tomorrow. What did Golson fumble when he went under center on the fourth and short, or did they just not get enough, you know, on the 1 4th down in the first half?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those strange things that look like a good snap to me.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
But we thought that there was, I don't know, it's all getting mixed up, but we thought that there was a terrible spot on third down. We thought Golson had made it on third down, and then Folston, we thought, had definitely made it on fourth down, and that spot was a little shaky on the other series. So, you know, I don't know. Notre Dame challenged the spot, I guess.
Right. No, that was not. That was clearly not
short.
A good challenge.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. But what about the play before that? Because we had thought that Golson had, that there was a terrible spot on the play before that. That on third down, Golson, I think on a scramble, had actually made the first down, or maybe it was a designed run. I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? That I can't remember.
Okay.
I can't remember if that was a bad spot or not. There were a couple bad spots throughout the game that, you know, we were yelling. But for the most part, I mean, you look at that stuff.
How about whenever there's a game where, you know, and again, let's give Jameis Winston a hell of a lot of credit. I mean, he was almost perfect in the second half. Once he got on track in the second half, he made some great throws. But what I always, you like to go after the officiating more than I do. But when I see a game like that where, you know, we are getting pressure but just not quite getting to him, you know, I mean,
there were several holding.
I was gonna say they didn't call holding last, did they?
There were several. In fact, the interception that he threw, the worst, you know, what's being called his worst college throw so far, there was holding like you wouldn't believe on that play. Ridiculous that they didn't call it. But, you know,
but they just couldn't get him down. You know, they only got him down once.
No, that's right. Yeah, and it just was one of those things where, you know, inches away. I mean, the whole entire game, there were several plays that literally are just inches away. That's, you know, it's frustrating. But, you know, you look at everything that we did and with the way that we ran the football, the way that, you know, Golson executed. One thing that I have not had a chance to look at, but I could swear that last interception, not that this matters, but for statistics and everything, I could swear that he came down out of bounds. It should not have been an interception.
You know, I saw a picture today, and it sure looked like as he was about to catch the ball, his right foot was definitely going to come down in bounds. So I don't know, but
maybe he did.
Yeah,
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to really pay attention to that.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking in terms of statistics because I saw that. But you know, give Golson credit. I mean, holy cow, 4th and 18.
Right. Oh no!
I mean, how many times has this kid done this?
Right. Well, just think.
Yeah.
I mean, getting back to the play again, just think about it. You know, like if they, and I mean, it is clearly, unambiguously, I believe, a rule that if you remove your helmet on the field of play,
no, it clearly is.
It's a penalty, right?
Yeah. It clearly is, and this is pretty
so.
Bad.
But just think about it. So if they call. What's funny is, you know, they could have called the defensive holding on ProSize. So they make either one of those two calls, and there we go again. We've got 4th and 2, basically with no time left to win the game. You know, which would have been. I mean, because you know, 4th and 18. I give Golson a hell of a lot of credit because you know after the game he basically blew off the PI question. And was like, you know, that's going to happen. And he basically put it on him like, you know, I just felt like I could have made a better play on 4th down. I mean, that's a pretty, mature approach to, you know, because he had played well. He'd played through some pain and a minor injury. They said it was cramps later. But, man, his play to find Corey Robinson to keep things going was, you know, that was really big caliber
on a 4th and 18. If you really think that through, what are the chances you can drop back on a normal drop back and release the football you know, on a normal, the chances of anybody being open are none. But when you string the play out like he did, you got a shot because so much time is passing that the DBs can't keep up with the guys that are out there. And that effectively is what he did. Now, whether he planned on doing that, I don't know. You kind of hope so, but just goes to show, you know, what a remarkable athlete he is. But not just what a remarkable athlete, but what a remarkable winner.
Yeah,
this kid
both,
he's proved it.
You know, both quarterbacks are big time winners. I mean, you know, Notre Dame. Yeah, Notre Dame. You know, I think they're the first team to hold Winston under 34 points, just barely under 34. Right. You know, some of those throws he made in the second half, pretty damn impressive. And also, you know, they were throwing a lot of different stuff at him, and he gave him credit to the way that he adjusted at halftime, whether that's coaching or that's just him. But he was throwing to some spots. You know, one of the things that Golson, you know, has to improve on that Winston already has is Golson hangs on to the ball a little bit sometimes, and he, you know, is behind guys or they're waiting for the ball. Winston, he is leading guys. The ball is there when they make their cut. I mean, it's pretty amazing to watch.
You know, a great game. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm sure it's neat for you having an opportunity to be at a game like that. Because from whatever I've talked to a couple of people that were there, and they said it was an unbelievable atmosphere, just a college atmosphere like you can't imagine. And it's neat. And, you know, it's tough to swallow. This is a tough one. It's going to be real interesting to see where we go from here, because I think this team can either build on this and drive that anger for them to just finish this thing hard this season, to get back to prove what they want to prove, which is we're legit. But, you know, this is, I think for all intents and purposes, I mean, we have a program right now. Brian Kelly's proven that. He's done it. We now have a program that is enviable. And I think that, I mean, this is just great stuff. You can't make this up. So,
well, one of the things that I think is kind of underrated that a lot of people probably dismiss right away as coach speak when they hear it, but one of the reasons I think this team will be okay, and I don't think that they'll lay any eggs the rest of the year. They might get beat, but I don't think they're just going to come out and lay a flat one. Is, you know, number one, it's a good time for a bye week. They can kind of go home a little bit, kind of get their heads on straight, and come back and, you know, be ready to work. And but, you know, you'll hear a coach, and Kelly has said this about these guys a few times, is, you know, they love to play football. And, you know, we forget sometimes. I mean, some of these kids are blessed with incredibly athletic ability, but they'd rather, you know, talk to girls or, you know, play video games, or, you know, they're not kind of as dedicated to the game as we might think they are, or as we may think we are as fans. But these are obviously a bunch of guys that love to play football. And you could tell the way they came out prepared yesterday to play on this huge stage. And I think that's what we'll see the rest of the year. And that can go a long way when you've got a long season against a tough schedule and you've got to be ready to play every time you put your cleats on. So I think that, to use my favorite Mike Brammer phrase of all time, I think that bodes well for the rest of the season, because these are a group of guys that really like to play the game, and each week is a new challenge, a chance to get better. And listen, that's all you can ask from these kids, is just wanting out to come out and get better. They've shown me a lot already.
They did, and let's be you know, frank about this. It's a lot of fun to be a Notre Dame fan right now. You know, we've had 20 years of some rough stuff, and this is finally where we've wanted it to get to, which is, hey man, we can compete with anybody, and we are there. It's tough to take. It's a tough pill to swallow, but man, you can't but have a heck of a lot of pride, you know, being in the situation that the Notre Dame football program is in right now, because it looks very promising. Some great stuff. In light of everything, I mean, there's been some tough hurdles. I mean, look at what we've overcome just this year alone with everything going on and the players that, you know,
sure,
key guys like Kaveri Russell. I mean, man, holy cow.
Yeah, and, you know, Collinsworth, obviously, you know, is out.
Be getting hurt. I mean, this is just...
Nicky Baratti. But, the, you know, injuries are part of the game.
No, it's part of the game. But I mean, you're right. You know, we have depth, and we have a program right now, and that's something we haven't had. So.
And we definitely found ourselves a first-string running back, so...
Well, I'm going to argue that one. But anyways, it was really the only disappointment for me was not seeing Bryant get in last night.
He had a one carry.
He did? I don't even remember.
Yeah, he had one carry.
Oh, you're right. He did get in for one carry. You know, I tell you what, I'm just going to say this really quickly because we got to cut this off. We're actually going way long. But I got to believe there's something going on with his ability to understand his assignments when he's not getting the football because – I can't understand how he's not getting in with the kind of talent that he's got. There must be some things that we just don't know, obviously.
I think it's probably less about him right now than it is that, you know, Folston is in a really comfortable spot, and he's
– Folston's a great player and everything. I agree with you. I just think that he's such a talent that you got to give him six carries a game.
Well, I'll give you this. Put him back there on the kickoff returns. I mean, you know.
Or that. There you go. At least get him back there on the kickoffs again.
With Carlisle.
Right. I don't know. But in any event, I love the kid. I've seen him. I know what he can do because I've seen him, and I'm looking forward to that day when he breaks out. But
hey, special teams were good. You know, Brinza had that bad kickoff to start the game, but he was money on his two field goals. And the punting was his. He had a great punt at a key moment of the game. You know, and his other kickoffs after that were terrific. You know, it was just an all-around well-played game.
Really
and it's a shame it had to end on a call like that. And, you know, as a football fan, if the shoe was on the other foot, you know, and Notre Dame had the lead, and, you know, we were the beneficiaries of a call like that, you know, I'd be happy, but I just don't like that in general. In sports, I just don't like that.
Yeah, because it's like you kissed your sister. You know? I'm sure FSU's thinking that.
No, they're not. I can guarantee you they're not. I was there.
They're eating it up.
Yeah,
they think it was justified.
They're the reigning champs, and you know, so what they care about is, you know, continuing to be undefeated and continuing to be the Mac Daddies, and they can't understand, and I actually can't blame them, why they're not the consensus number one team in the country.
Yeah, I think you got to knock the champ off.
I do too. Right.
It's the way it should be, but who knows? We'll see. We'll discuss. All right. Well, unfortunately, we've been missing a few shows here and there. Let's get back on track with that as we get.
Good deal. But, we will.
It's been fun. It's been great. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanek, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.